Today on Maine Calling, the power of a potluck or bean supper. People in Maine have been gathering for bean supper since long before Maine was a state. Native Americans cooked beans with venison and maple syrup. Beanhole beans originated in lumber camps. And for generations of Mainers, Saturday night bean suppers were simply part of growing up. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Whether it is a bean supper, a potluck party, or a big cookout, there is power in gathering together to eat. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about a concerted effort to refire the tradition of community dinners. The founders of Community Plate believe that sharing meals leads to something bigger than simply filling your belly. They're trying to change the world, one plateful at a time. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Did you grow up taking part in community or church suppers? Turns out sharing a communal meal is not only a longtime Maine tradition, it is also good for your health and happiness. Today we're going to discuss the impact of shared meals from potlucks to bean suppers. Joining me, Carl Schatz, who is part of the husband and wife team with Margaret Hathaway, who co-founded Community Plate. They also co-authored two volumes of the Maine Community Cookbooks and own 10 Apple Farm. Sandy Oliver is with us, food historian, columnist at the Bangor Daily News, freelance writer and author of several books on food history. And Mika Cates is a doctoral student in public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School, and he is a research associate at the Well-Being Research Center at Oxford and a senior analyst at the Happiness Research Institute. We invite you to join the conversation. Tell us about your shared meal tradition among family members, neighbors, or other groups, and what it means to you. You can send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Carl, I'll start with you. You were last on Maine Calling, I believe, talking about the Maine Community Cookbook, but now you're part of, you're leading this great big effort called Community Plate. Tell us about it and how you got the idea.
So Community Plate is a nonprofit, and what we do is we host community potluck suppers. We call them story-sharing potlucks, and it's a combination of a traditional, Maine potluck supper and storytelling and story-sharing. We've been doing this for the past 2 years all over the state. We've been in 12 of Maine's 16 counties. We've hosted suppers. And I think we just hosted our 32nd supper in 2 years, which was in Smithfield at the Fairview Grange in Smithfield.
So what is the idea behind it? What are you hoping to accomplish?
Yeah. So the idea actually stemmed from the Maine Community Cookbooks. We saw the connections that people were making on the pages of the cookbooks or through reading the stories of people in the cookbooks. And we really wanted to try to bring that off the page. And so we had the idea of beginning to host some community potluck suppers where people could bring food and recipes and stories and get together. And right around the time we were thinking of this, the surgeon or the former surgeon general came out with his advisory about the epidemic of loneliness. And we really saw this as an opportunity to address the epidemic of loneliness and social disconnection and a lot of the sort of discord that we all feel, I think, in our communities and neighborhoods.
And also
today,
coming out of the pandemic where something like a community plate would not have been possible. So
yeah.
I'm going to turn to you, Sandy. Of course, a long tradition of shared meals in Maine. A lot of people think of the bean supper, but that's not the only shared meal. Tell us what it was like to grow up in Maine 100 years ago and where you may have eaten with others.
I think parks have been a way for all kinds of institutions to build community. And of course, one of the important communities was around churches. So potlucks for churches might have raised a little money for the church, as well as being a place for everybody just to gather for sociable purposes. Don't forget we had chowder suppers too, not just not just potluck and bean suppers. Lots of organizations like Masons, fraternal organizations with their with the women groups that went with each one of them. Odd Fellows, all of those folks had potluck suppers and other
We,
fundraising suppers as well.
yeah, so the bean supper was traditionally on a Saturday night, right? Now, is that every Saturday night or once a month? What was the tradition?
Varied a lot depending on where you were. Yeah.
And
You know,
what about the
Saturdays are
chowder?
the same thing. Just whenever it seemed like a good time to do it. Or if there was a particular project coming up and people needed some money for, making an improvement to their building or to solve a problem or to raise money for a family in need. If someone had lost their house to fire or there was a sickness in the family, suppers like that were thrown in order to raise, a little pot of cash.
And
Our
give us a
Masons
sense.
gave,
Go ahead.
the Masons here on Islesboro raised money for, our preschool, for example. I mean, they raised money for their own purposes, but they customarily have at least one potluck or more that raises money for a group.
Give us a sense. I think a lot of young people today can't even imagine the scope of how many community suppers there were, how many people came to them. But, people who are older lived in an entirely different world in Maine, didn't they?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I remember potlucks at the Congregational Church where I grew up. My mom and dad, Christmas, for example, Christmas potluck before the holiday. Santa Claus always came to that one. And we would gather at the church, and my mother brought plates and cups and silverware from home, set it up on the table. If I wasn't there when she set the table, I always knew where we were going to sit because I recognized the plates. And so, there's it was a very companionable thing to do.
Mika, from reading the work that you're involved in, I know that you are very focused on happiness and the lack of happiness that these all these studies are showing us. How does a shared meal contribute to bringing more happiness to a community?
Yeah, so a lot of my research does focus on subjective well-being, which is just sort of another way of saying happiness or how people feel about the quality of their lives. And you don't have to spend too much time with this research to figure out that sort of one of the number one predictors or the number one predictor is social connections and people's relationships with others. Part of my research recently with a few others has been looking at shared meals in particular as kind of a forum for social connection, either facilitating it or sustaining it or helping to grow it. So we recently wrote a chapter in the World Happiness Report this year that looked at the relationship between sharing meals and well-being all around the world, and then also focused on kind of a deep dive in the United States as well.
How did you study this? How did you try to put some metrics to it? And what did you find?
Well, as far as my research goes, this is one of the easier ways of studying this topic because basically what we did was ask people very simply, how many lunches and dinners did you share with somebody in the past week? What's really nice about that question is that it is relatively easy to answer. It's pretty objective. It's very comparable. So a lot of times when you're doing happiness research, if you ask someone in one country, are you happy? Ask someone in another country, are you happy? It's difficult to know to what extent you can compare those responses. But if you're asking people in two different countries, how many meals did you share with somebody in the last week? It's kind of much more objective, much more comparable. What was really surprising to us is that this relatively simple question of the number of meals shared in the last week proves to be incredibly predictive of people's subjective well-being and levels of happiness. And like just to give you one example of that, we tried to compare it to some other leading indicators. And as it turns out, this metric of how many people did you share or how many meals did you share in the last week proves to be more important in explaining variation in well-being around the world than income or employment. So if I want to know how happy you are, it's more informative for me to know how many meals you ate with somebody last week than it might be for me to know your level of income.
This is interesting because when my children were young, there was a lot of research coming out about how important it was for families to gather for meals, to have dinner together, even if they have busy lives, as often as possible. But yours, and that was more about having your children be successful and confident and things like that. But you're talking about any people, people who live together or people who don't live together, just simply sitting at the same place at the same time eating.
Yeah, so that's right. Specifically, we're asking like meals with somebody that you know. So that can include family, but it can also include friends or colleagues, coworkers, children, associates. So, but we do specify that it is someone that you know. There has been a lot of research on family meals in particular, and that sort of children and adolescents growing up who eat more meals with their family, that tends to predict a lot of positive life outcomes, mental health outcomes, education outcomes, physical health outcomes, eating habits, that kind of thing. But here we're taking a much broader perspective of just, you know, how many meals did you share with anybody that you know in the last day or in the last week?
And maybe your research doesn't tell us this yet, Mika, but does it make a difference whether you're eating with, you know, a spouse eating with his or her, you know, husband or wife every night, and or a big group like what Carl's organizing?
So it's funny that I'm actually researching that this week, looking at that, trying to cut the data in that exact way. So for the purposes of the World Happiness Support chapter, we actually just considered broadly anybody you know, and we don't really have very detailed data. This is data that's collected from Gallup from 160 countries all around the world. It's really comprehensive, but not incredibly detailed. There is some really interesting data in the American Time Use Survey asking about meals and social environments. And so I'm trying to actually analyze that to see if there is a difference. My intuition's cut in two different directions here. On the one hand, I could imagine that sharing a meal with somebody closer to you might be more important for your well-being. On the other hand, there's a lot of research that shows that even just interactions or connections with weak ties, people who you don't know very well, or even strangers who you get to know over the course of a meal, can also be really important for well-being. So I'm actually kind of curious to see what comes out of this. I'll let you know when we have the answer.
You know, it's funny, Mika, it reminds me of one time I went out, my husband and I couldn't get a restaurant reservation, so we ate at the bar, and we sat next to a man who is an inn owner from Vermont, and he said to us, "Oh, I always eat at the bar because I meet the most interesting people. When I travel, I always eat at the bar." So that may be a new line of inquiry for you in the future. Joining us right now is Barry Atwood, who is a video producer. And more importantly, he helps organize the Beanhole Suppers at the United Church of Christ in North Gorham. Hi, Barry, and thanks for calling in.
Here, how are you?
I'm great, Barry. Tell us what your church does for these Beanhole Suppers. How long has it been going on? How often do they happen? How many people come?
Okay, that's three questions. Let's see.
Well, just tell us about them, Barry.
They've been going on for as long as I can remember. I moved into the neighborhood in, 40 years ago or more. And the church is the United Church of Christ, 3 Standish Neck Roads, right across the street from my house. And I noticed some activity over there one day. I can see the beanhole and some people gathered around. So I went over, and next thing you know, a few years later, all of a sudden, I'm in charge of cooking the beans. But we cook 3 kinds of beans in the bean hole, which is a brick-lined hole pit dug in the ground. And they get prepped in the kitchen first. They get parboiled, so it softens them up. And then the special magical sauce is added, and there the kettles are closed up, and they're lowered down in the hole. The hole is covered with, in our case, it's covered with a stainless door. That's actually, it's an old elevator door.
So Barry, I'm going to stop you right now because there are people who know exactly what you're describing, but there are people who may be new to Maine or young thinking, the hole? I mean, what is he doing here? You have somebody at some point in the past dug a deep hole in the ground, correct? And built a fire in the bottom of that hole?
Exactly. So dug a hole. It's probably 6 feet long, 4 feet wide, 4 or 5 feet deep. And it's lined with fire brick. And yes, a fire is built in the hole, usually an hour and a half or so before the beans go in. And there's a crew that works on the fire, and they feed wood to the fire. And I'm in the kitchen getting the kettles of beans ready. And then we carry them out there and lower them into the fire pit or the bean hole. And by that time, there's probably 6 or 8 inches or more of red hot coals in the bottom of the pit. So they're moved aside a little bit to allow the kettles to fit in. And then the pit is covered with what used to be an elevator door, but it's a sort of an insulated door which goes on the top. And then coals and dirt and what are shoveled on top of that. And it sits there from 5 o'clock-ish on the night before until 7 or 8-ish the morning of. And we meet over there. We uncover the hole. And I've seen, there's so much heat in that fire pit. I have actually seen in the morning, we pull the kettles out one at a time to taste the beans, check to see if they are done. I've actually seen the beans, the liquid in the kettle bubbling in the morning, which is kind of amazing. So yep, they're completely cooked and well cooked. Then we put them back in the hole and bury them again. We don't build up the fire. There's plenty of heat in there. And then 4 o'clock in the afternoon of the supper, we bring them into the kitchen and put them on the stove. In pots of water to keep them warm, but they're always plenty warm. So we cook three kinds of beans, pea, kidney, and yellow eye. So there's a bean to please anyone there. Some people don't like one or don't like another, but anyway, we cook three kinds of beans. I think other suppers may not cook three kinds. I don't know. I haven't studied the other
suppers. Barry, how many people come to these suppers?
I'd say we can seat like 50 or so, and we generally have two seatings. The first one is generally always full, and the second one anywhere from half full to full. So let's say 70 to 100 people, I would say, on average, are the guests. And people line up, you know, about 15 minutes before we let them in. So there's always a line of people waiting to come in and be seated.
I have to go to a break, but I have to ask you, why do you think they matter? Why do you dedicate yourself to these?
Well, why they matter and why I dedicate myself, those are two different questions. It's a tradition, and a lot of the people that come are older-ish, and, of course, I am now older-ish, but there are young people, too. So it's a kind of a neighborhood tradition, and we put out sandwich boards the week of, bean supper Saturday night. I just think it's something that people expect because it's been done for so many years. I can't tell you when it started, but it's been a very, very long time. So beanhole beans, it's a tradition that goes way back to the time of the Native Americans. And I don't know whether the settlers taught the Native Americans or vice versa, but beanhole beans have been cooked for generations.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so Barry, we're talking about how they bring shared meals bring happiness. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that because, for me, the most important thing about a bean supper is the camaraderie. This was especially true. It was tough in COVID. You know, we had spaced out seating and attendance was off. But to bring people in a neighborhood who don't generally, when they get older, they're not going to lots of social events. But to bring those people together, sit them down, to share a meal, and just, I mean, conversations just going on and on in all directions. I think that's the value of the bean supper. Yes, the beans are good, the food, and it's all donated food, homemade pies. You know, it's a lot of really wonderful homemade food. But to me, it's the camaraderie of sitting with your neighbors and people you may not have met before, and having meaningful conversations about whatever you want. And people leave happy. They're full of beans and full of food. And I've never seen I don't know what an issue would be, but I've never seen an issue. It's always been a very pleasant bonding experience. And we've had, I mean, 1 year of four or five guys on motorcycles stopped with leather jackets and everything. And I'm not criticizing, but came in, sat down, had their meal.
Not criticizing, but that's not the usual attire for your beanhole suppers.
No, it's not, but hey, everybody's welcome. And
wonderful.
As soon as you walk in there, you sense the spirit of a neighborhood group sharing a meal together. And I think that's a New England tradition that probably goes way back to the very beginning.
Barry, thank you so much for calling in, and so nice to hear your voice. Barry Atwood with the United Church of Christ at North Gorham. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and we are discussing being part of a shared meal and how that contributes to well-being, whether it's a potluck, a bean supper, a cookout, something else. Joining us today, Sandy Oliver, who is an author and food historian, Mika Cates, a Harvard doctoral student and Oxford University researcher, and a senior analyst at the Happiness Research Institute, and Carl Schatz, who is co-founder of Community Plate, co-author of the Maine Community Cookbooks, and co-owner of 10 Apple Farm. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Sandy, Barry said something about how people, I don't think he meant it this way, will be full of beans. And it made me think about the expression full of beans, because I think he was just talking about their bellies being full. But I'm wondering, do you think that this expression comes from the bean supper?
I bet it predates bean suppers. I mean, lots of people had pots of beans around. If Saturday night was your usual night, because you had been baking all day on Saturday, that was a customary New England baking day, and the bean pot would go in the oven and bake on residual heat. So you might have beans around for a few days afterwards. I mean, it means you're peppy, doesn't it?
Yeah, full good of spirits. Beans, you know. Yeah, maybe telling a fun story, something like that. And Carl, I wanted to ask you a little bit earlier, Mika and I were talking about whether it's having a meal with, you know, a family member or somebody you barely know. And that's what he's going to sort of look into for his next layer of research. And I know, Mika, I'm probably mischaracterizing that a little bit. But but that's something that you've thought a lot about as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually. When people come to a Community Plate story sharing potluck, we actually encourage everyone to sit with someone they don't know. And I think there's something really powerful about the opportunity to interact with strangers. We don't do it that much. We spend so much time on our phones or other, you know, screens, that it's really taken away a lot of the opportunities to build as what Mika referred to as weak ties. And those are sort of the connections with people that we are, you know, are very not like good friends, or but just kind of acquaintances with, or don't know at all. You know, think about the person in the line at the grocery store or things like that. And so by encouraging people to, you know, sit with people they don't know at a potluck, they're having new conversations, they're meeting new people, they're making new connections. And you get the sense there's a certain serendipity in that. And you get the sense that the world is bigger than just, you know, the silo that you might be living in.
And Mika, there is indeed research on the power of the weak tie, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So there's been some studies and even some interesting studies that have kind of run experiments and randomly assigned people to two different groups and asking some to say hello to the bus driver or the person at the coffee shop and asking the other group not to. And they find kind of significant increases in reported levels of happiness following that. And also there's a whole other body of research that weak ties are really important in ways that you might not expect in terms of finding jobs or moving to different neighborhoods. Actually, it's often kind of the second or third or even fourth tier of our social relationships that prove to have pretty significant influences in our lives.
And Sandy, is the physical table a part of all of this when we're talking about a shared meal and the weak ties? I mean, if you have little tables for four, it's going to be a lot different than one of those long church tables with people lined up.
I do think so, yes. If you have three or four long tables in a room and chairs on either side, you know, you're going to have a chance to sit next to someone next to you or across the table from you. And that's a wonderful way to get to talk with people you don't know.
Yeah, Jennifer, when Community Plate works with community partners, they provide the venue and the tables, and we always insist that they have long rectangular tables for these suppers and that we don't use the big round tables, because at a big round table, you can only talk to the person on your left or your right. You can't talk to the person across the table from you. But at a horizontal table, there are five people in your immediate vicinity.
Right.
That you can have a conversation with.
I love that. Well, joining us now, Angel Jamison, who is a member and leader of Sabino Hall in West Bath. Angel, did I pronounce that right? Is it Sabino or Sabino?
Hey, it's whatever you want to call it, Jennifer. We welcome any pronunciation.
Well, what do you say,
Angel? We refer mostly to Sabino, but whatever works.
Okay, well, I understand the community's been holding weekly summer potlucks for more than 100 years. So tell us about the history of the neighborhood potluck. Do you know it? How did it begin?
I do. So I have been attending the potluck since I was about 5 years old, when my parents bought a cottage in the community in West Bath known as Sabino, but the suppers started back in 1922, and so, as I shared, so Sabino is a coastal community along the banks of the New Meadows River and corresponding inland, and so folks have gathered that are part of the community every Thursday for those who want to join, every Thursday during the months of July and August. And so dinner starts at 6:30. It is a potluck. You bring your own utensils, plates, and there is a host who sets up drinks, historically coffee and tea, and just helps to greet people with their dishes. And then there's always some sort of entertainment or education or informational program after. So I have been attending them since I was 5 years old. My family, we now live in Sabino, and it's just an amazing community.
I want to know, are there certain people who are known for certain dishes at this potluck? Are there certain people who are supposed to bring something because they're so known for it?
Yeah, you know, there are folks that bring their signature dishes. You know, I'm thinking of Martha Adams or Betty Oliver in the past, who would bring, you know, their historic clam casserole or their baked cauliflower. My mom, Donna Mitchell, who is no longer with us, was known for her baked haddock with scallop dish, which was all of four ingredients, but absolutely delicious. And so we are a community of tremendous cooks, both traditional dishes as well as, you know, anything that's currently going on trend-wise.
Okay, Angel, I'm curious. What are the four ingredients?
So the four ingredients, it's so simple. It's however much haddock you want, 1 to 2 pounds, melted butter, sleeves of Ritz crackers, and then however many scallops, usually maybe a pound. My mom was always a little heavy on them, which is delectable. And you just mix the crackers, the scallops, and the butter and place it over the haddock and bake it, I don't know, at 350 maybe for a half an hour. And it's delicious. And
Sandy's
so
cracking up. She's nodding. You've had this, Sandy.
That's great. Let's hear it for Ritz crackers. You can
right?
do that with tomatoes, right. too. It's really yummy.
Oh, with
Ooh,
tomatoes. So,
yeah.
Sandy, would you do either or both?
No, or either or.
Okay.
Not all.
Okay.
No, haddock and tomatoes.
Well,
Angel,
before we let you go, since you've been doing these and going to them since you were five, let us know what is any potluck etiquette that you'd like to share if someone's thinking about starting up a potluck in their community or neighborhood?
Oh, I would say just do it. And, you know, simple is always best. It's really ultimately the love that you bring to the event of being together, and the food is the additional draw. That's what I would say.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Angel Jamieson with the Sabino neighborhood in West Bath, where their weekly summer potluck tradition has lived on for over a century. Let's see here. We're going to go to Rob, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Rob. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, Jennifer. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I was able to attend a community plate potluck here in Brunswick, and the work that Carl and Margaret are doing is just absolutely tremendous. We are from away. We moved to Maine and made it through the pandemic, and then we're looking to sort of, I've always looked to get more involved in the community and to meet people. And our family, you know, we gather as a family each night to share a meal and to sit down and share not only a meal, but to have some entertainment and to hear some incredible stories is just, it's just wonderful. And you leave those experiences, or this one that I attended in Brunswick, with, you know, not only a full belly, but a full heart, because you've met people from the community who you can acknowledge when you see them around town. You have that shared experience, and it really builds that bond that I think a lot of people are lacking. That community meal had all ages attend, which was fantastic to see. And from there, I have since gotten more involved in storytelling and really sort of worked on that piece of my life and been able to share some great stories. So it's definitely a wonderful thing that I would encourage anybody to attend one of the community places.
Wonderful. Podcasts. Rob, thank you so much for calling in. And now we have Nasser calling from Portland. And Nasser, I understand you also attended a community plate program.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Nasser Rouhani. I am also from away, and I came to America 4 years ago. I'm a Baha'i from Iran. So actually this Saturday, May 31st, marks the 40th anniversary of my coming to America. You know, finding a sense of community has always been important to my family. And since we are transplants, we need friends and community. And Maine has been that home for us. And community plate is a beautiful extension of this spirit. We are very fortunate to be able to attend this program 3 times. And we have made real connections and real friends. You know, the friends that they come to our home and we eat food together at home. And, you know, it reminds me of the time that, you know, during the COVID, we held online cooking classes with my wife, and we cooked simple foods, you know, in front of a bunch of neighbors in the area and ate together. And as mentioned before, we tried to combat epidemic of loneliness. So community plate builds a bridge that helps bring people together, people from different cultures, families, and hearts. And I am so grateful to Carl and Margaret for establishing this initiative. And thank
Nasser,
you very much.
Nasser, thank you so much for calling in. Carl is just grinning ear to ear. So thank you so much for calling and sharing that. Calling in now is Claudette Dayanina Haze, who is the founder and executive director of In Her Presence. Claudette, thanks so much for calling in, and tell us about In Her Presence. Who does that aim to serve?
So thank you so much, Cindy. My name is Claudette Dayanina Haze, and I'm the founder and executive director for In Her Presence. And In Her Presence, of course, it's a nonprofit organization focused on women and families to empower them, and through different programs, language, workforce, cross-cultural communication and being really the bridge so people can be empowered and integrate in the new system.
And we're talking today about shared meals. How does In Her Presence use shared meals to fulfill your mission?
So, great, interesting question. You know, I think when we come here from our country, there is really there's a letting go we do because we really the way we gather for a meal with our family, friends, the taste of the food back home we had is really gone when we arrived here. And we start from the scratch, really trying to see how do we, how can we really be familiar with the new food, the local food from here, and really adapt ourselves. So it has been really a long journey for In Her Presence. We even created back in 2018 a cookbook where our women were really cooking and giving them what they love to cook from that. And now we are using it as really, a tool for fundraising, a tool for advertisement. So the mainstream community also can be inspired from that. And more than that, we have been doing for example, Immigrant Greens last year. We worked with another Wayside and other program to see how our immigrants can be familiar with greens, because the greens we find here, we are not familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And then we tend to use the cassava and all those the other greens which are really imported, but they are very expensive. And
yeah,
from that, we were trying really to educate our community, and we did it. We did a video. We did all different cooking with different people groups who work together with youth, with our senior, with our young mothers. And the way we are doing it, it's really different because we are trying. It's so hard to cut your habit and really jump into the new food. But the way we were doing it, we are bringing the greens and then starting mixing the greens, the local greens, with maybe a fish that we like,
mm-hmm,
maybe with
mm-hmm
another food we like from home. That's the way we have been doing.
Well,
and
Claudette,
also,
thank you so much. I need to go to a break, but I so appreciate you calling in and sharing this. That is Claudette Dayi-Ninahase, who leads the organization In Her Presence. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, sharing meals with others, whether it's a potluck, a bean supper, or a community plate event that Carl Schatz organizes. With me, Mika Cates, who is a student and researcher, a PhD student with the Happiness Research Institute, Harvard and Oxford. Carl Schatz with Community Plate and the Maine Community Cookbooks, and Sandy Oliver, author of several books on food history. If you hurry, you can get your comment in. You can send a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Peter, who's calling from Cherryfield. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Hey, we have been doing, our church, the Cherryfield Congregational Church, has been doing monthly suppers in the summer for at least 50 years that I've been here. But these are not bean suppers. These are real sit-down restaurant quality meals, and we start off together. We sing a couple of hymns with the piano player, and when the piano player breaks into, when the roll is called up yonder, we know it's time to eat. Our church about 10 years ago established a community dinner, a free community dinner. We call it Down East Table of Plenty, called DTOP. Every Sunday afternoon down at the Maine Seacoast Mission property is a free dinner for the community. and we really feel good about that.
It sounds fun.
So, and everybody looks for our pies.
And Peter, what do you bring to the potluck? What do you? Oh, it's not a potluck. Take part in the cooking?
I take part in the cooking. My scouts help serve, and I bake. I'm known as a pie baker. I bake a pumpkin pie and a blueberry pie, which I bring. I have been asked mostly for years by the pie lady. My wife has been asked to make the pies, even though she knew I was baking the pies. Finally, about 4 or 5 years ago, the pie lady actually started to ask me directly, a man. I thought it was pretty cute.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And before we go, is there a secret to your blueberry pie?
I've been told my blueberry pie is better than Helen's, which is, you know, which sets the standards around here. But I use a dash of ginger, a dash of nutmeg, lemon juice, and a little cinnamon. And it makes all the difference in the world on a blueberry pie.
Interesting. Peter, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. I love it. I've never heard, Sandy, of ginger in a blueberry pie, but I bet it's delicious.
No, I haven't either. Nutmeg, absolutely. Yeah.
Lemon, I have. Let's see here. We have several things coming in on email and Facebook. We have a Maine School Garden Network on Facebook. We always have a potluck meal at our annual meeting, a chance for networking and great food after professional developments workshops. Emily on Facebook writes, the Trenton Grange and Surrey gatherings have a free community potluck the first Friday of each month. An email from Carl, is there a public Google calendar where one can see that lists the public suppers? I generally just find them by dumb luck, seeing a flyer posted somewhere, driving by with a sign in the churchyard. Carl, I guess I can ask you about the community plates. How do you find out about them? How do people find out about them?
Well, we have a list of upcoming events on our website. The next two suppers will be in Westbrook and in Damariscotta in July. They're not on our website yet, but we'll be posting those shortly. I know that there's a lot of suppers that get posted in the newspaper. If you look in the sort of local section of the newspaper, there's often a section of public suppers that are happening at American Legion halls or churches or, you know, different venues that are hosting community suppers. And there might be a small, often it's a small donation. All of our suppers, community plate suppers, are always free. We feel really strongly that there shouldn't be any economic barriers to participating in community. And so we're working on soliciting donations and writing grants and things like that to make sure that we can keep the public suppers that we do free of charge for people who are coming. Plus, people are bringing food. So, you know, typically that's your ticket in, is if you're a potluck, is the dish that you're going to bring. But we also tell people that if making something is a barrier to participation, they can buy something. And if that's a barrier, then they can just bring themselves and their stories and be part of the community.
Dave on Facebook writes, we used to frequent the local Saturday night bean supper at the Seniors Community Center here in Bath. You'll have your choice of four different varieties of baked beans, some kidney, others the traditional navy bean. You might get lucky and come in time for a helping from one of the several casseroles made with love from one of our area's most seasoned cooks. The atmosphere is family-oriented, and oftentimes you'll hear an amusing anecdote. Sandy, I have to ask you this. Barry Atwood talked about the three different kinds of beans they use for three different kinds of dishes, and then he's mentioning four different kind. Is there a right bean or a wrong bean for a bean supper?
Of course there is. When in Maine, Mainers like big beans. I grew up in Little Bean territory, which is southern New England. And then when I moved up here and married a Mainer, I found out that no, you have to have big beans. You know, kidneys, the yellow eyes, or even a Great Northern, those are all larger beans. And there were always so many more interesting beans and pastimes than we have now, but a lot of them were larger. So the big bean is a real main bean, and that's so. The other thing that I think is interesting is I've noticed at our Mason's bean suppers that they're always a vegetarian bean, so that the vegetarians don't feel left out of the bean supper and they're always welcome. So,
Yeah, that's
and
right, because
that's a
the
good thing.
traditional way to make them is with salt pork, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
And
but of course it
then
makes it
whether or not they're
very.
sweet is debatable.
Historically, beans weren't very sweet at all. And the sugar gets added at the end of the 19th century for various reasons, mostly to do with industrialization to bake beans. But we had a wonderful lady here on the island, Pauline Bird, who liked going to bean suppers, and she used to get so upset when all of the different beans brought in were all dumped in one pot. She said, "You have to keep these beans separate." And what she was saying is that she wanted to hear the conversation between the pots of beans, which ones were sweet, which ones had maybe a little bit of tomato in them. She liked them. She didn't want your beans all dumped together. You had to keep them separate.
All right, I can see that. Carl, I have to ask you about transportation because, we've done so many programs on Maine Calling, whether it's, we're such a rural state, such long distances, so many people out there, especially if they've lost a loved one who are living in a small house by themselves who may or may not drive. Is part of what you're doing, making sure people have transportation so that they can take part in the community plate?
We haven't gotten to that yet, but it's definitely something that we've talked about, trying to organize volunteers who can either bring people to a supper, take them home. We know certainly there are older Mainers who don't drive at night. They may come, so we're looking at doing more, in the next year, more as lunches, sort of potluck lunches rather than suppers, so that for older Mainers who drive during the day but not at night can make it there more easily. And then at some point, looking to volunteers. But it almost inevitably, because we're working with community partners, wherever we go, the community partners are often organizing things like that, or they know people who should come and can organize rides for them if they don't have them. And that's one of the benefits of working with someone in the local community when we go and do these suppers.
Mika, I wanted to ask you a theme that's sort of come up with several of these calls is that there are people from different generations sitting together. And I'm wondering if there's been research on well-being and happiness when there is exposure to different generations, when older people get to spend time with younger people and vice versa.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I do think that there's been a lot of research in particular on the well-being of younger people and the well-being of older people. I think there's rising rates of isolation and loneliness among both groups. I mean, particularly with sharing meals, we find that there's actually a really stark increase in dining alone among all age groups, but especially among younger people. At the same time, older people are much more likely to dine alone than people of other generations. Although I'm not actually sure if there's research on sort of cross-generational impacts on well-being, if people sharing meals with people of different ages or spending time with people of different ages, if that has particularly important impacts. I do know that there are some interesting policy initiatives to try to solve these dual problems kind of at the same time. So sort of introducing daycares and retirement homes is a thing that I've heard about before, but I'm actually not too familiar with the details of that research. But I think it's a really,
Yeah.
really interesting question.
And intuitively, just from personal experience, I think generally speaking, whether it's generations or rural, urban, whatever, that getting out of one's own bubble is pretty good for your well-being.
Sure. Yeah, I could certainly agree with that. Yeah.
Carl, if somebody wants to have a community plate in their community, what do they do? Just call
Yeah.
you?
Just reach out on our website is communityplate.me and they can email us and say that we're interested, that they're interested in doing it. And I just sort of in closing, I just want to say, like, how amazing would it be if the solution to loneliness and social disconnection was as simple as just getting people to sit down and share meals together? I mean, this is like such a big problem, but the solution potentially is really, really simple. And I think that's what, you know, we're trying to encourage people to do at Community Plate. We sort of consider ourselves a community catalyst. We kind of will go in and just remind people how great it is to get together in community sharing meals and stories. And we're just out of practice, you know, as a society, as a culture, of doing this. And whether it's the pandemic or, you know, whatever it is, and we just got to start doing it again.
Well, thank you all. Carl Schatz, co-founder with his wife, Margaret Hathaway, of Community Plate. They also authored the Maine Community Cookbooks and own 10 Apple Farm. Sandy Oliver, a columnist at the Bangor Daily News, a freelance writer, author, and food historian. And Mika Cates, studying public policy at Harvard. He also works with the Well-Being Research Center at Oxford and the Happiness Research Institute. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.